Voices of VR podcast.
My name is Bernhard Drex, better known as Drexter Dupre in Second Life. I document what Second Life users, Second Life residents make in the world with the tools that are provided. So focusing probably more on art and education more than business, I would say, although the business entrepreneur aspect comes in when I profile, for example, someone like Zach, who is 21 and who makes his living making magical effects in Second Life. He scripts them and then he puts them out there and he sells them to the rest of the Second Life community. Second Life is a gigantic user-created virtual world that is interestingly somewhat not ignored, but there is a lot of misconceptions about it, especially interestingly enough at this conference here, where people, you know, dismiss it as, yeah, I know, you can kind of dance and chat in it. That's what I heard, that's a quote, to, well, I didn't know that it is still around. This is the convergence of now having these devices and having already the world is just actually amazing. So from a Second Life resident standpoint, I think folks have been waiting for interest in VR and these devices coming online so that we can be even more immersed. Having said that, when you have a connection to culture in the world, in your community, you don't necessarily need an Oculus Rift to feel immersed. It's an enhancement, no doubt, but I think that elevates us, and I'm sounding elitist as a Second Life resident, that elevates us above two hands floating in midair. Yeah, sure, you can have a gun and shoot things, but who are you? So the whole identity thing is just, the power over your identity and your life is really the killer thing. And then as an added bonus, if you're a good businessman, you can make money.
I see. And so what is it that is really drawing you into participating in the Second Life community then?
It's a complete coincidence. Back in 2007, a friend who played in a band with me, I'm a musician, and we were both in our mid-30s at the time, said, hey, we should go on tour. And I go, no, touring is, we have kids, let's not tour. And then he says, well, we can have a virtual band. And this is really true. I read Snow Crash exactly at the time. And then he said virtual band, and I go, what do you mean? He says, well, my son told me about this virtual thing, and you can do this and that, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked it up, and then I was in, and boom, that was it. And I wasn't interested anymore in a virtual band. I started documenting what other people do, and the first story was about a group of retired public officials. That's a true story. A group of retired public officials playing virtual democracy in Second Life. It is somewhat wacky because you live a life of public service and then you retire and you don't golf or you don't write a novel. No, you go into a virtual world and replicate the life that you have led. So it's fascinating. And then I just started doing little reportages every other week and every month, time permitting. And now I have a newer series called The Drex Files World Makers that connects the avatar behind the person. And that's the missing link because, like I said earlier, Linden Lab has a bit of an image problem in the sense that people don't understand that everything is user-created. And that's exciting. Not to knock what people are doing here. There's developers here at the conference. They do amazing things. And some of the game content is interesting. I'm not a gamer, but I can completely appreciate how much work goes into some of these games. But what I find way more exciting is democratization of tools. And that's what Second Life does. And VR and the metaverse in the future has to have that component. What I regret on my panel a little bit is to not press the issue of a Facebook-type metaverse, a Facebook-dominated metaverse, again, assuming that they would replicate the model that they have now on Facebook in a metaverse, which could mean all sorts of things, which could mean data mining and very limited expression of your identity and all this kind of stuff, and that stuff scares me. I want to see a creative metaverse. I want to see an open metaverse. Yeah.
So what can Second Life and its experience in virtual identities, what can that teach the virtual reality development community about how to treat identity?
So much stuff. Right now I'm working on a story, it's going to come out in June 2nd, about a 29-year-old designer from Italy. She's an illustrator and a designer, and she started in Second Life 3 years ago, and she's playing a child. She's playing a 10-year-old. She's playing a 10-year-old version of herself. Now, when I say this to people, usually go like, oh yeah, that's all weird. No, it's not weird. She has a community of friends. They're all playing 10 to 15-year-olds, very innocent, child play. They go around, they actually tease other adults, they goof off, you know, very harmless stuff, but just playful stuff. And that's their type of role play. So this is an adult, a 29-year-old woman, that has this other identity that she can freely create. She creates the avatar pretty much from scratch with a combination of skin and clothing and tattoos and stuff like that. Sort of a composite of her former self that offers different types of identity. And that's how she goes into the world. So when she comes upon other people inside the world, they will look at her and see arguably way more richness than what they may see in real life. In real life, they look at her and they put her into a box right away. Ah, here's a 29-year-old woman with an Italian accent. She's shy. Okay, let's put her in the shy box. Yeah. In Second Life, she bounces around, she jumps up and down. Something she has trouble expressing in real life. There is an issue of, it's unclear if she's not diagnosed autistic, but she told me in the interview there is a high probability, there's a lot of traits. So this is twofold. She has the freedom to express herself in ways visually that are different, they're more colorful than in real life, but also in terms of behavior, she can have more confidence in expressing herself. And again, going back to the Facebook metaverse, again, I'm just assuming that if we don't know anything about this, but if Facebook were to recreate the Facebook model in the metaverse, and if we're all forced to look exactly the way we look in real life, and if, you know, let's just assume they would delete our accounts if we dare to play a woman or somebody else or whoever, because then we're not real, we're not the real person, that would be incredibly sad, because it's a very narrow form of expression. Yeah, and that's what Second Life provides. It's agency over identity is what it is.
And so do you have an anonymous alt to go into Second Life to not connect to your other identities?
I do, and the weird thing is, and I talk to other people that I profile on the series, they also have alts, and some have alts for a very specific reason of testing an experience, going anonymous, seeing others, how they experience their store, let's say if they're Second Life business people. Or a friend of mine who is a game designer in Second Life has an avatar that then she sends on the quest to test out the games that the group designed. And she tells me, it's weird, I have no connection to that avatar. It feels really strange, and it becomes a puppet. So it's the difference between if I were to talk to you with this puppet versus me really talking to you. I have several clones that look exactly like my main avatar with different clothing. And I have several avatars for filming. So when I film and I have to stage an interaction, like let's say an interview subject would talk theoretically about this is what happens and this blah blah blah, then sometimes I have to stage it, I have to reenact it with actors, and it's just logistically easier if I do it myself with two computers or with my friend at home, and then we'll just do it and we'll film it and it's done, versus getting all people. So that's the purpose why I have avatars. But I have not explored genders or different, well, there's one exception. We have a character that we created, Fluffy. He's kind of mischievous sort of fluffy animal, and we created a web series around him. And sometimes I and other people have access to that account as well, and sometimes we go in as Fluffy and people know him from the web series, and then sometimes he shows up and people talk to him and say, hey, can you cuddle with me? And so, and then Fluffy would go into a store and say, hey, these boots look good, and just say random things. So, but all in good fun. But primarily I myself, and the very interesting thing is, because I'm so well known, I mean, others are well known, but I am well known, and I feel, honestly, sometimes a certain amount of stress when I log in, because I know that people see me as coming online, and then I get inundated with inquiries often. And sometimes I wish I would be anonymous. Sometimes I wish I could just ignore all this and just go on a quest and nobody would recognize me. And it's a weird feeling, and that's the same feeling that sort of a real life celebrity, I guess, might feel when they just want to go, let's say, with their kids to Disneyland or something like that. I'm not saying this because I feel so important, but this is a real thing. And I feel so obsessively connected to my audience that, and that's a real life too, by the way, that's a slight obsessive thing, that I've got to make mentally sure that I said goodbye to everyone. You know, some people, they can't just leave, right? They go like, okay, it's 6 o'clock, I got to go. I can't do that. I'm going to go track down the guy from Leap Motion who I have not officially said goodbye. I'm going to have to say Philip Rosedale, goodbye, thank you. You know, this is crazy, kind of. And in Second Life, it's the same thing. So if I show up on a big thing with a lot of people, before I log off, I have to go through every IM. I have to go through the public chat and make sure that I addressed everyone's concern. I can't just, okay, quit. I got to go. But that's more like maybe I should talk to a psychologist about that. Yeah, so maybe I should create an alt. But again, then it's not me. You know, it feels fake in a way.
So because we're at the Silicon Valley virtual reality meetup, I'm curious about how you see virtual reality crossing over with Second Life and where you see that going.
I have a quote from Ebbe on one of the previous podcasts, I'm not sure, but and Carl said something similar, and I'm just going to echo this. I think Linden Lab is perfectly positioned in this new ecosystem, in this new interest resurgence of virtual reality. They're perfectly positioned. Yes, people will say, well, they have a world that is built on old code. You know, frankly, I see stuff in there right now that is amazing and that is very valid. I don't know for how long. Maybe High Fidelity is doing the stuff that we wish we could do in Second Life in terms of less lag and all this kind of stuff. But right now, Linden Lab is perfectly positioned because they have knowledge in running a huge world that is simulated on 40,000 plus servers, a huge world that has millions of US dollars in microtransactions per day. So they have this financial, I interviewed the financial team a couple of weeks ago. They have expertise in a variety of ways, and especially above all this stuff, the financial system, the hosting system, they deal with people and they deal with a diverse population. You know, they're the Obama administration rolled on with the Merkel government in Germany. Name any number of real life governments rolled into this one entity that has to deal with incredible diversity and friction and problems. And Linden Lab, for better or for worse, has gathered expertise in this over the past 10 years of Second Life's existence. And I think the fact that Second Life was built on, as I always hear, on old code, on legacy code, that's an issue that nobody is ignoring. But who knows what they're making? Who knows what they've been working on under the hood? Second Life right now runs better than ever. Second Life is so different from when the tech press hyped it. And that's the sad part, because the tech press can't get over how they portrayed Second Life in 2007. They're still using the same screenshots, content-wise, interaction-wise. It's mind-boggling what people do, the creativity. It's magical. Bottom line, Second Life is a very good deck. They need to play their cards right, right now, right now. And I hope I can help them by donating my free time as a passionate documentarian to counterbalance the media narrative, which is negative. And I see, you know, this is going to have a backlash too. I think everybody is aware that this might very well happen. This new resurgence right now, there might be a backlash, you know, with Second Life. What happened was the platform wasn't stable at the time. So businesses came in and all sorts of riches were promised,
right,
and it didn't pan out.
6 p.m.
I'm wrapping it up. There's somebody talking over me. I'm wrapping it up. It's awesome, and it's a new day, and all I'm afraid of is the Facebook metaverse. That's all I'm afraid of. We want creativity, creativity, not consumerism. Boom. It's awesome. Thank you. I got to get him.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks.